On FM, on DAB, and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark. Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Tonight, we find out all about the life of motorbike and sidecar racing. It looks spectacular when it goes right, but every bend can turn into a horror story. Newark's very own Simon Horton makes his Sport HQ debut and answers one simple question. Why? It's Wednesday, and that means we talk to Dave Farger with all the not fast news, and Tony Smith gives his own unbiased match report from last night's Flow Serve match. Live around the world on the internet, on FM and DAB, this is the renowned Radio Newark Sport. And Newark Flow Serve moved up to second in the East Midlands Counties League with a commanding 4-1 victory over fifth-placed Eastwoods at Lowfields last night. A brace from Elliot King and Tyrell Shannon-Lewis doing the damage in a first half that blew the visitors away. Jaguars wheelchair basketballers took a lovely trip up to sunny Scotland to play Glasgow at the weekend. After a slow start, the team found themselves 13 points down at the halfway stage. They rallied and played some outstanding basketball in the third quarter to bring themselves within 4 points of the Scottish rivals. Unfortunately, the fourth quarter was too much effort for the tired arms of Newark players. The final score 42-57, but what an effort to go up to Glasgow to play wheelchair basketball. And the former Australian vice-captain David Warner walked off the field in protest while batting in a grade cricket match in what Australia cricket has described as a sledging incident. You do feel for him. Stop laughing. Warner was banned from international cricket and state cricket in March for the ball tampering scandal in South Africa. He walked off when he was unbeaten on 35, and in true amateur cricket style, his opponents, Western Suburbs, led him back on to score 157. And finally, a story especially for Tony, because it's all about Yorkshire. And a man has paddled down the Great Ouse in a giant pumpkin boat. Tom Piercy, who works at the York Maze, claimed it's a world record for the largest pumpkin boat, weighing 619 kilograms. As there is no currently any recognised world record for this, they've contacted the Guinness Book of Records to try and get it sorted and the achievement recognised. The giant boat is even on display at the York Maze until November the 4th. I suppose it makes a change from pigeon racing up north, lad. We will come to Flow Serve later. I promise we will come to them later. The Jags wheelchair basketball team going all the way to play Glasgow, to play the Glasgow Rocks. And guess what? It's the return fixture this week. So Glasgow coming down to Newark. I mean, nothing but admiration.
Yeah, it's just a tremendous effort, and it's a real example for the footballers of the town who are scared to leave the shadow of the parish church.
Just look what these youngsters are doing. It's one heck of an achievement, and we're going to talk tomorrow night to Chris Hassel. He's going to tell us all about it. Admiration is not the word I would use when talking about David Warner, to be perfectly honest.
I just don't understand how they can have sledging in Australia in that weather.
And I can't understand how he walks off because of a sledging incident when he's been the instigator of most of it.
And I would have thought it'd be too hot in Australia for sledging. But, you know, it's just...
You're back, aren't you? Last night was lovely. Becky was here. We had a lovely chat.
But, no, it's just... you know, if an Australian walks off because of sledging, is even more mentally disarranged than David Warner is normally accepted to be by cricket followers.
Well, especially that one. Anyway, have you ever been in a giant pumpkin boat?
I didn't realise it was a confessions night, but yeah, no, I haven't, though. No. I can't believe they've not got the records.
There are many...
Norris McWhirter has left a gap there, hasn't he? Dear God.
There's many pictures on social media of our Tom in his flat cap and a couple of pigeons flying behind him.
Yeah. And his first mate, the Whippet.
It would have to be Yorkshire, wouldn't it? It couldn't be anywhere else. But the word admiration is going to come back tonight time and time again, because there are certain sports where I have to either think you're mad or the admiration stakes are right up there with 10 out of 10. Motorcycle and sidecar racing is new to me, and I would assume it's new to you because you don't seem to particularly built for either.
No, it's something I am knowledgeable about.
Is it?
Yes, there was...
this is going to be fun.
There was a psychopath, indeed there still is a psychopath in Newark, called Martin Jones. I don't know if you've come across him. And he decided to... Keith Brown, he was Keith's sidecar passenger. And they were in a bit of a spill on a tricky corner. And Keith says, I look back, and it was good news because he was moving. So, you know, I mean...
Tonight, we're talking to the sensible half of the team. Because he's on
the back.
Slightly more sensible half of the team, shall we say.
Not in the ashtray.
He's actually on the back, not sitting two inches above the ground, going 100 miles an hour. Yeah. But to explain everything over the next hour, we wonderfully welcome to Simon Orton. Simon, welcome to Radio New at Sport.
Thank you. Good evening.
As you can see, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
First question is why, but that's going to... I'm going to hold that one back, because Tony and I are going to work that one out for ourselves, if you like.
Yeah.
I want to know, first of all, though, who is Simon Orton?
Right, well, basically used to be living in Newark, obviously moved out of Newark now. Started my trade at Herons at Newark, Volkswagen Audi. Got my apprenticeship there, so cars and motorcycles have always been in my blood. Also from my dad racing. Dad used to race grass track sidecars as well. Even more nuts than I am on the grass.
Grass track?
Grass track, I mean, sidecar.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If you're on a tarmac road, which is not full of potholes, I can see there's a logic to it.
Yeah.
On grass?
Yeah. So,
that has got to be...
Yeah.
You'd have to be on grass to do it, wouldn't you?
That's it.
You'd have to be on grass to do it.
Dear.
But, motorsport's always been in my background. Got into karting, used to run the circuit up at Newark on the showground. Raced myself with the karts. I also know Martin Jones as well. Used to help Martin out a few years ago. Then I got into motocrossing, a few injuries from that, and then decided to go road racing. So bought myself a solo, built it up, went road racing. From that then went to sidecar racing. There's nothing like the buzz of racing a sidecar. Three wheels, wet, dry. It's amazing, the feeling.
How difficult is it to find someone to actually sit in that sidecar?
That is a bit of an issue at the minute, finding a passenger that wants to go that fast. But it is a buzz for both parties. With having a passenger, you've both got to gel together. You know, you've got to know each other's habits and, you know, what you want out of it.
I've got some notes which I shall read them in a few minutes. But just going back to what you sort of built up to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Motocross?
Yeah, did motocross. It's hard work, injuries... And, you know, coming back from motocross, it is hard work. And now I'm at the age where your bones don't heal as well as they used to.
The first of probably quite a few stupid questions, but when I was growing up and it was grandstand and everything, motocross was always on there. And it looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Then it lost its TV appeal for whatever reason. Where is the world of motocross at the moment? Because it's one of those that seems to have disappeared.
It's still out there, and there's lots of clubs that's, you know, still racing from schoolboy stuff upwards. I think a lot of the national stuff and championships, they're all still out there. but it's not televised, and that's the way that sidecar racing has gone as well now. I used to watch grandstand, used to love watching the sidecars, but doesn't get shown as much on TV now. A little bit now with the BSB Superbike, but not a lot.
And of course, when it loses its TV, it loses the revenue that TV brings in, and it loses its public support as well.
That's
and it goes into a sort of a niche. But how difficult is that?
So,
to keep the sport, to maintain the sport, or does it just go to the diehards?
Well, there's obviously different levels. Everybody starts at like the club level and moves their way up, you know, to different championships. But I think a lot of people now, it's up, going up to the BSB level and then the World Series. But so many things are changing in the sidecars with different CCs, engines that they're going from the bigger 1,000 CCs and putting the smaller engines in because they're going a lot quicker. But a lot of it is the financial side behind it, which is, it is very, very difficult.
So the decision was made to move into motorbike and sidecar. Well, yeah. How long ago was this?
I started racing sidecars in 2011. I had my last solo race at Castlecombe, and I said to my mum and dad, I says, I'm going to pack up the racing now. And I think they were quite pleased at that.
Yeah, the fact that I was running around the circuit going, yes!
And then I says, I'm going to buy a sidecar.
that
was it then. That did it, yeah. So it was like me and my dad went across to the Isle of Man, brought a sidecar, brought it back over here, stripped it down, rebuilt it. And from there, I've gone out. I've had two or three different passengers, you know, over the years. The one I've got at the minute is absolutely superb.
Once he gets back out of hospital.
I didn't have that one on at the time.
What's your injury list?
To be honest, I've been very, very lucky with the sidecars. I had a crash at Darley Moor where ran off the track and hit a wall, but no serious injuries from that. But the latest one in Scotland at East Fortune, I sustained two broken ribs from that. So
That's the one I've got me notes on.
Yeah.
Yes. Do they do sidecars on the Isle of Man?
Yes, they do, yeah. For the TT, it's something I've always wanted to do, but they brought a new rule in last year. Anybody over 40 years of age can't become a newcomer. So now 47 this year. So,
that's a bit...
So it's something I always wanted to do, but you need a big wallet to do that.
I can imagine, but that would be one heck of a circuit, wouldn't it, for you?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, 37 three-quarter miles per lap. So
you have to get out there early one morning. So, 2011, you moved into it. So we're going to talk about 2018 and where we are now and the bike a little bit later. But the build-up from 2011 until now, has it been a progression each season?
It has, yeah. I mean, obviously, you can't just jump into one of these things and, you know, hope to win. It takes a lot of time, experience, obviously budget, with tyres and things like that. But yes, it is progression. There is people that have jumped into the sport from racing solos and have probably gone straight to the top. It takes some time to do it.
Did you have a go then when you was at the advertiser? I mean, you sort of didn't.
No.
Did anybody talk you into a little jaunt around somewhere?
No, but many years before my advertiser days, I was the motorbike columnist for the evening paper in Bradford, the Telegraph and Argus.
There's no end to your talent, is there?
No, I don't want to say talent, but there's no end to my calamities. And basically, I went around the local dealerships in Bradford and got a bike to test drive. And I only had my provisional license, so I wasn't allowed to ride anything officially over 125cc. But the Kawasaki dealership rather overlooked that one day when they gave me a Kawasaki 1300 for the week.
Nice.
And the guy said, they always gave me a guided tour around the bike and said, this does this and et cetera. And he says, whatever you do, don't touch the handlebar on the right. And I said, why? He said, it's the throttle. And when I did, I could understand what he meant. A 30-mile wheelie.
Brilliant. The bike, then. Let's just quickly go on to the bike.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously adapted, and the sidecar, I assume, it is bolted onto the side fairly strongly.
They're not bolted. Obviously, they're a steel structure. The bolted ones. You do get bolted ones. A lot of the classic stuff. They have bolt-on sidecars. Some of those. So it's a manufactured sidecar. We use obviously a motorcycle engine. The one that we've got at the minute, we're running a GSXR 1100, 94 motor in that one. Probably kicking out about 100 to 150 brake. But there's obviously various classes, 600s down to 350, two strokes. So
it's in effect a one-piece moulding.
It's basically, really? Yeah, it's a steel chassis with the engine bolted in. Then you've got a fiberglass fairing seat unit. And then the passenger has its little tray platform on the back.
If you take it back to when he was the Bradford Times motoring correspondent or whatever, in those days, it wouldn't have been a one-piece unit, would it?
If it was a racing outfit, no, it would probably been a bolt-on.
Because that must have been... Yeah. And then bolts tight, you know.
Yeah, you've got to do a lot of checks on the bike on a regular basis anyway. And we've always said from every race that we do, we strip down and build back up, because half of it, the race is won in the garage before it even sets.
I would have, we'll talk safety as well, but I would assume you are scrutinised every
before time. You go out. Yeah. Everything, you know, leathers, helmet, boots, gloves, the bike. So everything has to be lock wired so it doesn't vibrate loose. So, yeah.
And apart from that, all it's got to do after that is hang on. Right, we're going running with Not Fast Dave. A few more headlines. And Tony, I've got another one from Australia for you about the cricketers. And then we're going to find out about 2018 and a certain accident at East Fortune in Scotland. Wednesday at 20 past seven, all the team in yellow are sitting by the radios listening to what Not Fast Dave has to say about another wonderful weekend in the world of the Not Fast Running Club. Dave, good evening.
Evening, Mick. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And a personal triumph for you.
It was, it was. Indeed.
Fire away.
Yeah, so personal best at my park run this week, which is... good. Been trying for a little while, so it's good to see it come down, the time. We had 25 of our club members over two different park runs. Now, it was a bit of a Not Fast takeover at New York Park Run this week. So all the Not Fast members were volunteering. So we didn't have that many members running. But yeah, like I said, there was personal best for myself, Rebecca Lax, Faye Patterson and Tracy Thompson. So all the team spurring on certainly did help. Sadly, we had two members running in marathons. Nettie Stevens, she ran the Alzheimer's Marathon in 5 hours 28. And Piotr Dura, he ran the Snowdonia Marathon in 4 hours 23:37. And I can only imagine what the Snowdonia Marathon was like. On Sunday, we had Leon Leong, was at the Prestwold Hall 10K, and he completed in 1 hour 3 and 37. Two of the big events on Sunday, we had quite a few members at the Harby Clockback 10K just down the road. Claire Wood finishing in 55:40, Jim Lovett in 55:52, Richard Borrell just after in 55:52, Angela Brown in 59:59, so just scraped the 1 hour mark, Amy Lanham in 1 hour 2:41, Faye Patterson 1 hour 4:18, Joanne Gray 1 hour 4:18, Sarah Walken, 1 hour 15:12. Faye Hemingway, 1 hour 18:14. Karen Bolland, 1 hour 18:40 as well. Now, the other big event was the half marathon, the Worksop Halloween half. We had a few members there. First back for our club was Richard Hallam, 1 hour 30:17, followed by Anthony Cork in 1 hour 42:35. Peter Lane got a personal best half marathon, 1 hour 51:02. Matt Gascoigne in 1:53.07, Martin Dickinson 1:54.52, Stuart Hawkes 1:54.36, and Lynn Gascoigne 1:56.58. Jeremy Reichel 1:56.58, and Kimberly Etherington Bates has got a second half marathon PB in as many weeks in 1:59.57, so she's certainly shaving those seconds off. Annette Taylor in 2:04.13, Steve Needham in 2:11.04, Nettie Stevens 2:15.23, Rebecca Latt's got a nice little cheeky half marathon PB, 2:23 on the nose. Chris Redhead is 2:23.42, Diane Kennett is 2:27.07, Susan Catley in 2:30.33, Gemma Lindsay 2:30.38, Kirsty Watson 2:35.07, Lisa Leach 2:35.11, Sue Needham 2:39.37, and Kira Green in 2:57.14. So that's a bit of a ramble on of a lot of names and numbers there, but some really good PBs, Peter Lane, Kim Etherington Bates and Rebecca Lacks, to get PBs in half marathons is really some fantastic running.
I think, taking you right back to near the beginning there, I like you, I can only imagine what Snowdonia was like. Oh, it would have been horrendous.
It would, yeah. Now, I don't know what the course is like. I don't know if it's hilly or flat or undulating. I can only assume for a marathon around Snowdonia, it's going to be hilly. You know, you don't drive 10 metres until you're faced with an up or a down in Wales, so I can imagine it's going to be, you know, tough on the old calves and thighs.
And if the weather was anything like we had, then the best of luck to them, the best of luck to them. I think they'll
exactly.
probably,
well,
I think they'll
it
probably need it.
Yeah, it always rains in Wales, doesn't it? It's like Manchester.
That's why it's green, there. It always rains.
That's why it's so green, yeah.
Always rains over there. Good stuff. Dave, thank you so much.
Pleasure, mate, as always.
Another busy weekend to come, and you can tell us all about it next Wednesday night.
I certainly will. Thank you, Mick.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks. There you are. Not Fast Dave there with all the news from the running club. You know, this week and last week, we've been talking about looking after your body as a sportsman, looking after what you eat as a sports person. Yeah, you're not a sports person. Simon, do you have to be careful what you eat?
Yeah, definitely, because I'm a diabetic as well, so that's something that you do. You've got to keep yourself hydrated all the time as well. But it's something for the future that I've got to start doing now. I'm at that age now where, like I said, you know, you don't bounce back after you've had a crash and you suffer and work the next day is absolutely excruciating. Working on cars, on your knees, bikes. It's, something I've got to look at.
Becky was telling us last night how important it was before you did any sport to prepare yourself.
Yeah.
And when you've finished doing whatever you're doing, you also have to look after your body, because your body is pumping blood into different areas and different muscles are working, and all of a sudden you stop.
Yeah.
And the body has got to catch up to that. In your case, people say to me, well, all it's doing is sitting on a bike, but I'm not having that. But do you have to do you have a routine before and after?
Yeah, as soon as I've got my levers on, stretching, because, you know, once you're in the bike, you've got to be able to move comfortably. But I have to do a lot of stretching exercises before I actually ride. when I come in, I'm that excited, it's helmet off and straight to the bar.
now you're talking, Tony.
You've got to replace lost liquid.
Now you're talking. Right, a few more headlines, Tony. I've got three headlines, and all three of them you are going to love. And a scathing review into Australian cricket has been condemned as winning without counting the cost culture that has left players in a gilded bubble. The independent report was commissioned by Cricket Australia after the ball tampering scandal. The review has found Cricket Australia was partly to blame and viewed more widely as arrogant and controlling. Tottenham's England midfielder Dele Alli has signed a new contract that will keep him at White Hart Lane, or whatever it's going to be called, until 2024. And anybody that believes he's still going to be there in 2024, You're in cuckoo land. And the national governing body Swim England has apologised and removed an article from its website which suggested women should look slimmer in the pool if they didn't have jiggly bellies.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
And that, Tony, is true. The piece advised that women with jiggly bellies should avoid wearing bikinis and said being pear-shaped has often been the plague of women. They have removed the article from their own website. Apparently it's been on there since 2010, but somebody's only just noticed it. That's what you call an own goal. Well done, Swim England.
Oh, tremendous.
People get paid to be in these bodies, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
These governing bodies.
I can totally assimilate with that. Because
you got a jiggly belly?
I've been banned from wearing bikinis myself for many years.
And it comes a great shock to you, hasn't it, that Australia have a winning without counting the cost culture. And their players are in a gilded bubble and they are arrogant and controlling. Nobody would have guessed that, would they?
How on Australian in general? I mean, let's just not pick on cricketers.
So, you know, I thought that just probably sums up the country. Any Australians out there listening to us?
Yeah, I mean, my friend...
You're not Australian, are you, Simon? No.
My friend went on a gap year before he went to university and he was going through the customs, having a chat with the customs official to sort out his visa. And the customs guy said, "Have you got a criminal record?" And my mate said, "I didn't think it was still necessary." That added about 2 hours to the interview.
That's how our Australian friends finished with.
But I am delighted that Dele Alli has signed a new contract
that's going to get Tottenham more money when he gets a transfer in 18 months' time.
It's going to expire the year before Tottenham move into their new ground.
And I'll say it again. We said it last night because Real Madrid are looking for a manager.
Mm.
Pochettino, I've been telling you for months, it will happen.
Steve Kirkham.
It won't go without Roche. Right, back to our guest, Simon Orton, and back to motorbike and sidecar racing, of which, remarkably, Tony seems to know a little bit about. This is the biggest shock of the night so far. In my notes... Line one is a dramatic high-speed crash cost Newark sidecar racer Simon Horton his championship lead. So we'll go and talk now about 2018. If you want, we'll come back to that. Or no, if you want, we'll go straight to East Fortune and you can tell us exactly what went wrong.
Well, to start off with the championship, it's been an absolute brilliant championship that we've been running in. The racing has been... very good racing with everybody, with the teams, everything, and I shall definitely be doing it again next year. We've had some good results. Beginning of the year wasn't the best. Went to Alton Park and we had issues with suspension and setup, but everybody has these problems, you know, first time out, beginning of the season.
Are you mechanic?
Yes.
Driver,
mechanic, driver,
team maker. How many of you
in our team? Which is Wintec Racing. There's that many people in the team that help out towards it. Some are vaccine, some are at every meeting. Sid, the photographer, he makes the breakfast, he makes the coffees in between races, he does everything. Steve, Broadstock, he's used to be my passenger. We raced in Belgium last year. We won the Belgium Road Racing Championships, myself and Steve did. There's my passenger that I've got now, Adam Buxton. He's from Derby. You know, everybody helps. And we've got people that help with welding, you know, making stuff for us. So, yeah, it is a big team and we're getting bigger and bigger each year. And we're also going to be taking on other riders sort of like under our wing to help them get up there with us.
Are you also responsible for getting the sponsorship that's needed to keep this thing going?
I mean, a lot of it is working 7 days a week. Mum and Dad have helped quite a lot in the past, which I couldn't do it without them. But yeah, sponsors, we're always wanting sponsors to help us out. even if it's somebody throwing £20 at us, they get the name on the bike, the van, clothing, corporate wear, you know, everything like that. Everything helps, basically.
So let's go to East Fortune, and we'll take it sort of down as I've got you was competing there, and anything like an half decent result would cement the number one position ahead of the final round.
That's it.
The
yeah.
local round at Cadwell.
Yeah.
It all went a bit pear shaped. However, the event did not go as planned, as the driver, that's you, flipped his machine on the third lap, and he dropped to second place in the standings.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Simon and his standing passenger, Brian Stephen, was able to walk away from the incident with just severe bruising. Simon said, "We were both very lucky. The outfit was damaged, so I'm now busy stripping it down and rebuilding it for the final round." So let's take it bit by bit then.
Yeah.
You seem to be getting the blame for this.
Yeah. Well, no, driver never gets the blame. You always blame the passenger. Brian Stephen was very good to jump in last minute. We went all the way to Scotland. I didn't have a passenger. My passenger was away in Mexico on holiday, and I didn't plan to do the Scottish round because I was leading the championships. But it was very, very close, you know, first and second position. So we decided we'd go up there and try and, you know, gain some more points. Got up there, Brian jumped on with us, went out in practice, he was fine. We qualified third, I think it was third on the grid, third row of the grid. I started to really put the power down because there was quite a few people in front of me. Third lap in, we went into a left-hand bend, flat out in fifth gear. So we're doing possibly 100, 120 mile an hour. But Brian had actually moved too soon, and I felt the back end go. I tried to correct it. By that time, it was too late. It had straightened up. It had gone off the track into a straw field that had just been cut. Managed to keep it going in a straight line. Then all of a sudden, it decided to come round on me. Went backwards, dug in, and it just threw us both out. Happened so fast. A lot of people behind said it looked like a bomb had gone off in a field. But luckily, I just sat up, made sure everything were working, stood up, but Brian was in quite a lot of pain.
Everything working on you or the bike?
Me.
Okay.
I just wanted to get the bike back up because that was upside down. But I felt fine. Brian was in a lot of pain on the floor because he'd broken his spine a year ago karting. So I was a bit worried.
And he got back in the sidecar.
Yeah. So I was a bit worried about him there, really. And it took about 40 minutes to get him on a stretcher and get him off to hospital. But he sent me a text to say that he'd got bruised neck, bruised back, and bruised kidneys. So, yeah, we was okay. But then the adrenaline sort of like wears off, aches and pains come. But I ended up going to hospital. I'd broken two ribs, which was... We were lucky. We're very lucky because it could have ended in tears.
if you're going to do anything, I've discovered in any way get injured, the worst thing you can do is ribs.
Yeah,
because it just debilitates you in so many ways. The worst thing is hiccups, but you don't want to go near sneezing, do you?
No, it's not nice. Well, after that, I had a week in Lanzarote to heal. Like, so it's...
Right, now you're going to have to help me a little bit. Brian's job then is not, as I imagine, to stay as absolutely still as still could be. You said Brian moved too early.
Yeah.
I'd almost imagine that he has to be a dead weight. That's not the case then.
No, but the passenger is crucial. I mean, we went into a left-hander and he was out on the left-hand side. He'd moved over to the right. And every movement that passenger makes, you feel that on the bike, you know, so that there's a flowing way that he moves over the bike. He obviously came across a little bit too soon. And that's what it caused the bike to veer off. And yeah, too late.
Because, I mean, at that pace on the corner, you want slight jolt and... The bike's going to have a mind of its own, isn't it?
Yeah, with a sidecar, you know, the slide.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got your slick tyres, and they do slide, but every movement that a passenger makes, it you feel it.
Can he see the course?
Yes.
As well as you, as you then? Yeah. Or is he sort of tucked
away? He has to know when I brake, when I'm going to turn, everything like that. There's a lot to do for a passenger. They're not just sat on that platform as a bit of ballast.
Yeah, far from being a dead weight, they're actually moving all over monkey throughout.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, it's worse actually than in a rally car. The co-driving rally car is not just saying turn left in 100 yards like that.
They're watching.
Because the driver's not even looking where he's going, really, is he? And your passenger, because that's about the last thing is as a passenger, he's got to work in this exactly the same mindset as you, which I say is okay if your man want in Mexico.
Yeah, that's it.
Because
Adam knows my driving.
Assume, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it was being as far as we were in the championships, up the front there, leading. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have gone to East Fortune. We wouldn't have had the injuries, the damage to the bike. My passenger Adam, he knows every move we do. He's watching me when I'm braking, because you're braking with your left foot, and obviously you're changing gear with your right foot, and he knows when to tuck in at the wind, watches my foot for when I'm braking, knows where to be over the right hand side. If the front end of the bike pushes on where I haven't got any steering, he's over my back for weight. So yeah, it is very crucial.
Very much so. October the 27th and 28th was Cadwell Park. We brought you in straight after the event.
Yeah.
How did it end up?
The weather was horrendous. First race, we went out for practicing because we'd not ridden on the bike since we've done all the repairs. I mean, the bike was totally written off. We've had to totally rebuild the chassis, new fairings, every little bit, new radiators. So we'd not been out since.
I bet was pleased with you when he got back to the garage.
Oh, God. Yeah. So we'd not ridden the bike, so we went out in practice at Cadwell. The bike handled even better than what it used to. Steve has done so many alterations to the bike. Really does handle well. So we'd qualified second fastest on the grid. So we went out for the first race, got down to the holding area, and an earth strap fell off the bike. So we had to go back to the van, repair it. By that time, they'd gone out on the track, so we missed the sighting lap. So we had to start from the back of the grid. So I think it was about 17th, 18th. But managed to pull through the pack, and we finished second in the first race, which got us the points. And I think the second race we had a fourth. So, yeah, we had a good weekend. The weather was the same for everybody else, so there was a lot of points up for grabs.
Well, Tony's already pointed out it was horrendous watching football. Never mind about what you got.
We had hailstones, wind. Yeah. It's, yeah. But we've managed to get second place in the championship. So we're over the moon with that. Yeah, it's been a good year.
In hindsight, do you wish you'd not have gone to Scotland?
Yes. Yeah. But it's just one of those things that's racing. You know, it's ups and downs. We've had a reasonable year at it. We've learnt lots as well, and which we can, change for next year as well.
Just before we go into the next break, can I just have a couple of minutes on the safety?
Yeah.
The bikes, do I assume you're all, in your race, the engines are the same?
No, we're the class that we're running, it's called pre-injection. So basically, it's any engine from a motorcycle that has carburettors. So from a 350cc up to a 1300cc. For next year, they're splitting the class up, anything up to 600, and then 600 to 1300cc. So there is a difference. So it's like an open class.
how is the bike scrutinised? I mean, obviously yourself has got to be in the flame
levers,
proof retardant.
Levers,
and the helmets. We understand all that.
Yeah.
But what about the bike itself?
Right, well, the bike, basically, we go for scrutineering, where a technical inspector will check that bike, make sure every nut and bolt is wired, you know, everything is safe for that bike that it has to be before it goes out on the circuit.
And that's every
meeting, that is,
How's that changed over the years? I mean, you've been doing it 7 years now, so has it got more stringent?
I think basically a lot of the technical scrutineers, they're have to go on, obviously, courses and that to check stuff. But no, I think everybody looks after the bike. You don't want to go out there and having bits falling off, because
it's you, isn't it? Because if it does fall off, you're going to fall off.
And that's it. And everybody looks after their own stuff. Yeah.
So. And nobody wants that at all. Well, we're going to find out what your plans are for next season in a couple of minutes. And we're also going to have a totally unbiased report on last night's football match between Flowserve and Eastwood. And if you believe that one, you'll believe anything. Craig Roach told this show that Flowserve had got 3 home games in just over a week and he expected 3 victories. 2 down, 1 to go. But how easy or hard was last night's victory? Over to our man at Lowfields, Mr. Smith.
I expected us to beat Burrowash and I expect us to beat Kimberley, but Eastwood was going to be the test, I thought, because they were 5th in the league before the game and we were 3rd. And it was, I thought it was going to be a very, very tight affair. And basically, Flowserve started in the first 10, 15 minutes like they left off against Burrowash. And it was just like the Alamo. I mean, how Eastwood kept him out, I've got no idea. Eventually, we scored in the 31st minute, got a second in the 33rd, scored in the 41st, and then in the first minute of added time in the first half. And at 4-0, we were absolutely flying. You know, the world's a happy place. Second half, we were still in control, but Eastwood came more into it. But then, unfortunately, a goalkeeping error from our debutant led to Eastwood pulling a goal back, but it was always a safe 3 points. It was a cracking effort.
I think it most certainly was. I think credit to Eastwood for the second half. Their manager had gone in that dressing room at half-time. He'd put the big lad at centre-half, he'd put one more in midfield, and they looked a better team. They looked a better team for it, but the game was finished.
But what I do like about Flowserve is they've got some superb players, but Kirky and Roachy are going out and buying bringing in even better ones.
He was probably right first time.
They're just improving the squad all the time. And the goalkeeper has come from the Notts County Academy. And he was, during Kevin Nolan's reign at Meadow Lane, he was the guy on the bench and played league games and FA Cup games for Notts County. So, very experienced lad, despite being only 19.
I think I worked that one out. What I like about Flowserve is the rapport the players are getting with the supporters. This was always going to be the big problem, non-Newark players and the Newark public. But the Newark public has taken to Sam and Elliot and the others like they've known them all their life. So
Sam Agar has got his own fan club in the corner.
Exactly.
They were chanting for him all night, bless him.
So that is good to see.
But if I can just add one final thing.
I'm sure I can't stop you.
A crowd of 154 at Lowfields on a cold Tuesday night. What a tremendous effort, Newark. Thank you very much.
I thought so as well. It was a good crowd. It really was. There's an interview with two-goal Elliot King on Radio Newark's social media pages on there. And I've already got to go back to Elliot and correct, more to the point, the secretary on one thing. Elliot's only about 18 goals off scoring his 100, but he won't be the first Flowserve player to score 100 goals.
It was his ninth of the season, ninth of an injury-hit season.
What he will be doing is joining an elite club, which includes people like George Bauer, Jerry Fell, Tony Craig and Gary Breeden.
Yeah.
And if you join that club, Elliot, which you will do...
Yeah.
You are joining some cracking centre forwards, and You're in your rightful place as well, Mr. King, I think.
Yeah,
but he won't be the first to score the ton. As it was pointed out to me this morning at 6:30, Gary Breeden has also got a ton.
Did you see Mark Fardell there last night?
Who do you think pointed it out? Yes, I saw Mark, and it was wonderful to see Mark again, and I'm desperately trying to get him into this radio station. But another 3 points, but they've got to keep on winning because they've dropped some silly points, and they're still playing catch-up, and we've still got to get Selston and Sherwood to drop some points somewhere along the lines. But there's a long way to go yet.
6 games ago, we had a shocking defeat at Ingles. It was only a 1-0 defeat, but it wasn't a flow surf performance. Since then, they've scored 28 goals and conceded 2 and won all 5. That's a great response.
We're going to talk about a lot more tomorrow night about this weekend's football, but I think there'll be another big crowd on Friday night because under floodlights, and you can't beat Sport under floodlights when Collingham take on Newark Town, and I think that's going to be another big crowd as the Newark sporting public comes out to watch their local sport, and that's what it's all about. Do you get many watching your sports, Simon?
Yeah, we do. It's one of them sports that sidecars normally get pushed along to the end of the day, though. So a lot of meetings, you know, people will watch the solos going out, and because it's the end of the day, they don't wait around for the sidecars. So, you know, we would like more publicity from it as well.
Oh, it's a shame, isn't it? Because it's got the potential to be the most spectacular.
Yeah, it is. It is.
it really has. So, 2018, at the end.
Yeah.
Glorious second. Nothing wrong with that. It could have been a first, or you could still have been dug out of a field in Scotland. It. So, you know.
Can't complain.
You both live to tell the tale.
Yeah.
And that's what that's the main thing, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
What's 2019 going to bring? Did that accident say to you, oh, hang on, I think I've had enough here?
No, that's one thing that worries me, because it didn't frighten me at all. So, I don't know what went wrong there.
It's no wonder you get on with Martin Jones.
Next year, 2019, we're actually building our own chassis at the moment. So, we're building a post-classic, ready to do the Belgian road racing again. So, we won it, the Belgian road racing, in 2017. So, I want to be out there for next year.
What's this, a sort of a prelude to our season?
Basically, the Belgian Championships starts March, June time. We go over to Belgium, we race on the roads. So, it's the Belgian TT, basically. We do Chimay and Jadine, the two road racing circuits. And then we'll also do Coire, which is another circuit. Going over to Belgium, they love sidecar racing.
It's big over there,
It's tremendous. I mean, signing autographs, it's great. They love sidecar racers out there. It's really good. So we're building a post-classic sidecar for that. And we've got a couple of other colleagues that's going to be racing with us as well on our chassis. And then also we're going to be doing the championships that we've done this year with the FSRA championships. A few modifications to the engine, gearbox, and then we'll be out there doing it again.
Well, we know you're going to Scotland, it's Fortune. That's not a name I know. And there's a Scottish racetrack,
Knockhill. East Fortune. Yeah. It's an old airfield, flat, very fast. But I've never wanted to do the Scottish series because obviously it's a long way to go. But I shall be there next year, and yeah, definitely out there doing it again. It hasn't put me off.
Whereabouts in Scotland is it? East Fortune.
East Fortune is. I'm trying to think now. Do you know? I can't think where it is.
It's all the same up there.
It's cold, wet, normally.
Yeah, you got the right place. That's definitely Scotland, yeah.
He thinks Scotland is Berwick, and that was,
it's not far from Berwick.
Yeah, all right. Oh, there you Berwick. Go, then.
God's own country.
Yeah. So you keep telling me. Cadwell Park.
Mallory
Park.
Donington. There's a wide range of circuits that we race.
What's your favourite?
Donington and Cadwell. I mean, first meeting at Cadwell, I had 4 wins, and I wanted to do that this weekend, but that the weather put stop to that. Mallory Park, we've had some good racing there, and hopefully we can get to Anglesey again. Anglesey was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, yeah, it really was. The weather was with us on that one. Yeah, it's a brilliant circuit to ride.
And the circuit at Anglesey is called?
It's called Anglesey.
I was hoping it would come out with some Welsh name.
No, I wouldn't be able to pronounce it anyway.
Because Belgium would be flat, I assume.
Belgium's the actual roads that we race there. They closed the roads up.
So you're allowed to do it there. You can't. Well, you go to the Isle of Man.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
It's shocking. Yeah. Absolutely shocking.
You never know. They might change the rules.
you can, but no. It'd be good. Well, it's lovely to chat to you tonight. Yeah. It's been great. For I've learnt an awful lot. I've also learnt that his lordship here is an expert.
Very much so.
Not knowing what, but he is an expert.
Yeah. We're still trying to work that one out.
And Simon, you're going to keep us in touch with what you're doing, so we can tell the rest of New York.
We can probably even get you out on a taxi ride so you could passenger and, you know, see what it's all about.
Our breakfast show team are always up for something like any sport like that. Our breakfast show team love to do that. So if you can get us on a taxi ride, I know a couple that would love to do that, because they're always up for an adventure, aren't they?
Yes, yes. And Mick is their agent, but amazingly, they're still alive.
Simon Horton, thank you for coming in to Radio New York Sport. I know you're a very busy man, so to take an hour out of your schedule, we do that's really fine. Appreciate it. Now, Mr. Smith. The Gordon Wellborn Week, the Dave Lewis Challenge. Probably Newark Flow Serve, the Newark Rugby Club Girls. What have they all got in common?
They're all regulars on this show.
They've all been on this show and they've all got so much better because of their trip to this show. And we're talking about a club tomorrow night that came on this show when it was struggling.
Is it the Pear-Shaped Ladies Swimming Club?
No, it's not. Not the Wiggly Bottoms or whatever it was. The Jiggly Bellies.
Jiggly Bellies.
The Jiggly Bellies.
What a great name.
It's the Grove Squash Club. Simon Drew is coming to see us tomorrow night. And he's bringing a young lady called Nikki. And Nikki plays for the ladies section at the Squash Club. And remember, 2 or 3 years ago, they were struggling to have a men's section. Now they've got a junior section and a ladies section. Okay, it may be something to do with the fact that there are new sports and leisure centre. They've got 2 brand new glass coated.
But that's unlikely because they came on here.
Totally. That's just as an aside. The main reason is they came on here.
Yeah.
And they're going from strength to strength. So Paul is coming in tomorrow night and we're going to talk all about the Grove Squash
Club.
That's
good because people never normally come back, do they?
Chris Hatton, no, that's his thing. You do. Chris Hassel is coming on the phones to talk to us about a memorable trip to Glasgow. And this weekend, it's the 3rd local Newark Amateur Boxing Club's event at Farndon, where they showcase the young boxers. So who else is coming on tomorrow night but to talk to us, our very own Suggies Gym's boxing correspondent, Megan...
Smash it.
...Williams. See, that's teamwork. So, until tomorrow night, we're going to leave you with what I've always said is the best show of the week, because I can remember the music.
Are we on again?
Oh. No. I can remember the music, and unlike this show, it takes an expert to present it. Sit back and listen to the sound of the 60s with the wonderful Mr. Doug Hall.